Hi, I'm Veronica Rickert, in today for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. An article last week by Ron Rosenbaum, published in Slate.com, is getting a fair deal of buzz among political circles. The article title kind of says it all. It's called In Praise of Liberal Guilt, It's Not Wrong to Favor Obama Because of Race. In the article, Rosenbaum makes the point that the term liberal guilt is being used in a sneering way against liberals who might consider supporting Obama as a kind of reparation for our country's history and to encourage a civil rights landmark. Some conservatives, on the other hand, say politics based on guilt is just a bad idea, and what's more, it doesn't make any sense to feel guilty for the sins of conservatives past. What do you think? Should liberals be ashamed of liberal guilt? Or is it a morally conscionable way to go? Should the current generation try to atone for the sins of its ancestors? Call us with your take at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Our guests this hour are Ezra Klein, the associate editor and staff writer at The American Prospect. His work has appeared in the LA Times, The Guardian, Slate, and more. He's a frequent guest on MSNBC's Hardball with Chris Matthews. And Ezra Klein, thank you so much for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
So you've read and responded to this argument about liberal guilt, especially the Ron Rosenbaum piece in Slate.com. Can you kind of flesh out his argument for us? Why is liberal guilt, at least according to Rosenbaum and to you, a pretty good thing?
Sure. I mean, I think one thing that should be done first is to separate it from Obama, because I read the article a little bit differently, and I wouldn't necessarily want to defend supporting Obama on those grounds. I think that would be weaker. I took Ron to be saying that over the past sort of 5-10 years, there's been a real sort of move to paint this sort of idea of liberal guilt, of welfare politics, of believing that something is owed to traditionally disadvantaged communities as a type of soft-headed emotionalism, and that it has really no place in politics. Why should we feel guilty? Same affirmative action fell under very much the same onslaught. And I thought Ron did an interesting thing, and he said, okay, I mean, it may be true that these things are politically unpopular, but this idea that there shouldn't be guilt, the idea that we should somehow feel like the sins of our fathers are completely in the past, seems to him, and frankly to me, a little bit absurd. And he makes a point, I mean, looking at Bill Buckley, who recently died and who wrote often and in a very sort of unsettling way about the virtues of segregation back in the 60s. And, you know, over time, came to feel regret and even guilt for what he did. And Ron said, you know, that really is sort of the correct thing. And I think Ron was smart to point out that, you know, this wasn't that long ago. People's parents lived under segregation. Their grandparents lived under Jim Crow. It's much more, I think, current than many folks in this country would like to admit. But I took Ron's argument, I think, a little bit of a different direction. I think, number one, the term liberal guilt is a little bit misleading.
How so?
I think a better term would be responsibility. I mean, I am a liberal. I don't know any liberals who really sort of sit around feeling bad about themselves for, you know, what's been done to African Americans in this country or to sort of most other minority groups. And the term guilt, I think, gets a lot of people in this weird argumentative loop where
right.
They say, oh, wait, well, I never did this. I didn't oppress anyone. I never owned a slave, not even one. So why should I feel guilty? And it isn't that people are telling anyone to feel guilty. I mean, the term liberal guilt was sort of part and parcel of why it's become a political weakness. I mean, it was termed that because it's a silly idea. It's much more a sense of responsibility. And here's why people have it. Because, yes, it's true that slavery is over. And, yes, it's true that officially segregation is over. And, yes, it's true that we've made tremendous strides in racial relations. But the fact of the matter is we still have a tremendously unequal society. We have remarkable levels of inequality. And part of the reason for that are sort of effects in wealth that manifest from slavery, where people, white people like me, have actually benefited from what was done to black Americans, 50, 100 years ago. And so the point, and I can go into specifics of that, I mean, a big one is called the wealth gap, where if you look at incomes among races, they're not necessarily the same, but whites make about 50-some thousand on average, blacks make about 30-some thousand on average. I mean, there's a gap there, but it's about 60% of what whites make. If you look at wealth, whites have about 80, you know, assets, the sort of airbags of economic security. Whites have about 88,000, and blacks have about 5,000. I mean, the difference is huge, and it's for sort of obvious reasons. Wealth is something that's passed down through generations. It has to do with how long you've been able to build businesses, whether or not you've been able to pass down property, whether or not you've been able to pass down sort of education, whether or not you've had, whether or not your father had wealth such that he could spare money to send you to college, on and on and on. And these effects exist today.
Well, going back to something you said, I'm sorry, I just want to jump in and go back to something you said at the beginning of your answer. Obviously, you're making the argument for a much larger case than something that would fall under the umbrella of liberal guilt. But it's worth pointing out that's how the debate has been framed this time around. That's sort of the buzzword that everyone has launched onto, and that's sort of around the hub around which the debate is focusing, those specific words, liberal guilt. You're saying they encompass much more than that, but what about the fact that those are the very words that we use to talk about a lot of the time?
Right, and I mean, I think you have to take Ron in what Ron is doing. Slate is a bit of a counterintuitive publication, and you're using a title for web hits. I mean, I think the case Ron is making can and should be separated out from the words he's using. And I guess my point is, if you say liberal guilt, what people are going to actually get involved in is the question of whether or not they as an individual should feel guilt. Should I feel bad about what I've done? I mean, that tends to be how we think of guilt. It's possible that my grandfather cheated on my grandmother, but I don't feel guilty about that. I didn't do that. And as far as I know, my grandfather did not either. Sorry, Grandpa. But insofar as liberal guilt has been painted as this sort of term, you get a lot of people just sort of going round and round in this argument of, well, you know what, my father was an immigrant. Well, hey, my father was an immigrant, but it doesn't mean I didn't benefit from these things. And you're not really telling people to feel guilty, but that is what they're offending, because people don't want to feel guilty. It's not a pleasant experience. Well, you're sort of telling people what liberal guilt is really about. It's not an effort to sort of inject the electorate with a particular emotion. It's an effort to say, you know what, we owe these communities that we took advantage of for hundreds of years, that we made money by using as free labor and as cheap labor, that we made money by keeping them from being able to compete in the economy. There's something owed here that we've not paid back. And which is why, I mean, I presumably Ron could speak to why he used the term liberal guilt, but I think that, you know, the failure of liberal guilt as it is, Ron is sort of explaining that, you know, this has become political liability. It's become political liability in part because liberals have let that debate get away from them. I mean, it's very much the way sort of conservatives like to call the estate tax the death tax. If everybody called it the death tax, mm-hmm. We would, in fact, repeal it. But that just isn't what it is, and it shouldn't be termed that way. And I think the same about liberal guilt. I think that it's sort of a failure of language that's gone in that direction. And I think it tends to, the problem with it is that it muddles the conversation. I mean, contrary to, I think, what you said, Veronica, I think the case I'm making is smaller because the case I'm making is actually policy-focused. I don't think people need to feel one way or another about it. I don't think people need to repent. I just think that we need to sort of honestly assess where these communities are and what role we've all had in it and decide, is something owed? Is this in some way sort of a fault in an aggregate sense of this country? I think it's very, very hard to make the case that it isn't. I think once you're there, I think then it's sort of a responsibility that sort of manifests in public policy that takes poverty and ghetto traps seriously and all of that becomes much more conceivable.
Well, you've said that you distance yourself. You don't agree, it sounds like, with what Rosenbaum had said, that it's focusing sort of on Barack Obama and whether, all things being equal, you know, obviously he says in the article there's tons of other reasons to vote or not vote for Obama, but if by chance you would like to vote for him because of race, because of the issues that you've just outlined there, that's not necessarily a bad thing. But you were taking a step away from this particular race and that candidate. Why?
Oh, I'm not really stepping away from that argument. Listen, if you want to vote for Obama because you think he's got a gleaming, crest white smile, I think you should do that too. The reasons we vote in this country are so peculiar at times. And that one, I think, is actually a pretty good one. I think the psychic benefit for this country of electing an African American would be so incalculable. It would be such a remarkable symbol. But my point about that was just that I read Ron's article a little bit differently, which was that was sort of a subsidiary point of it mm-hmm. to me. And the bigger point has to be able to transcend or endure Obama or an Obama loss, which is that this sort of understanding of sort of the role of the legacy of slavery in public policy needs to stop being a taboo. So my point was that I felt Ron was making a bit of a larger argument. But listen, if you want to vote for Obama because he's a black man, go for it. I mean, and it's interesting. I mean, I guess the flip side of it, the reason that point would be controversial is I'd say if you don't want to do that, then something, I feel like it's a fine statement in the affirmative that you feel like, you know, there's something to be repaid here, and it would be a real healing symbol for a country that, you know, frankly, could use some salve on that wound. But I think that the more common, I think we're seeing a lot of the opposite sentiment manifest in the results out of sort of the Appalachian communities out of Kentucky, where a lot of people aren't voting for Obama, specifically because he's a black man, which is worrying. But, you know, then again, I guess this is their right. But I think it does sort of show how much farther we have to go on a lot of this.
Well, in terms of some of the social disparities that you were talking about, how important a factor do you think this is, whether you use the term liberal guilt or some of the more eloquent ways you were talking about it? How important is that, do you think, to this race and what voters are going to do?
To the race, if Obama's candidacy was painted in terms of some sort of electoral reparation, if this painted as the reason to vote for Obama, the affirmative reason, is that you are paying back the black community, he would lose in a landslide. And rightfully so. That's not how you run a presidential race. I don't think it's actually going to play a huge part in this election. I think liberal guilt, as Ron was talking about, has much more of a sort of policy focused element to it. Insofar as in this election, because there's so much else going on in the Obama candidacy, it will not be raised either by Obama or in general by his supporters as a reason to vote for his candidacy. If it lurks in the hearts of some voters, well, then so be it. I think that, conversely, illiberal guilt, the desire to not have him be elected because he's a black man, has manifested often in this candidacy and has actually been relatively public. I think that, particularly on the part of some Clinton supporters, has been an effort to sort of do that in the passive voice, say, listen, Barack Obama's a great candidate, but this country is just not going to elect a black man. And so it's using the sort of discomfort among others to argue against his candidacy. So insofar as it's had an effect, I think the explicit effect, the way it's actually entered the conversation has been there. I think that as the conversation has gone, for the very reason that I think the Obama folks know that this would be a real problem for them if it happened, there's been, I think, a real effort to talk about Obama when you're talking about him positively, for his supporters to speak in race-neutral language, because I think the thinking is that, you know, he gets in here if people think he's the best candidate. He doesn't get in here if he sort of creates a racialized election.
Do you think that would be the best kind of election to have, a race-neutral one based on issues?
I mean, I think that we're going to have an election really based on issues when the unicorns come down and the rainbows come up. So I don't believe we're having that one way or the other. Do I think it'd be better to have a race-neutral election? I guess it really depends on how you're talking about race. Given how I imagine it will go, yes, I would prefer to have a race-neutral election. But if we could have more of a sort of honest conversation about these issues, I think that would be positive, too. I think it was Obama's sort of famous speech in Philadelphia after Jeremiah Wright, I thought it was sort of a positive moment for our country. But his speech, to be fair, to take it down to earth a little bit, mm-hmm. was a response to a political problem. It's not like he decided one morning he was going to have an honest conversation about race. He had to defend against the political weakness. And then as soon as that speech ended, the sort of talk was, I remember watching CNN and I felt, I watched that speech, and I thought, oh, that's a pretty beautiful speech. And, you know, that's, you know, I thought he said some very important things. And then I remember Wolf Blitzer coming on and saying, Candy, the question is, did Obama do what he needed to do here? I thought, all right, well, there goes our conversation. Huh. So I don't think that we're going to have, we're not going to have a race-neutral conversation, although I think we will. We're not going to have a race-neutral election. I think that insofar as the two candidates manage, if we're going to have a race-neutral conversation. But look, you know, the single biggest predictor of voting in the Democratic primary has been demographic. You've essentially been able to forecast the vote in any particular state, not thinking about the money of the candidates, not thinking about their message, not thinking about Jeremiah Wright or any of the other stuff going on, but just by plugging in the numbers of white people and black people and where they're from into a calculator. And so race is having a huge role, and it continues to. And whether or not we speak in a race-neutral way, we won't be living in a sort of race, we won't be operating in a race-neutral environment. And that, to bring it back a little bit, is a lot of the point I'm trying to make on this sort of liberal responsibility or guilt or whatever you want to call it, which is that this sort of effort to wave it away, to say that these are sins of the past, is just sort of a flagrant denial of the world we live in, which is very racialized, in which people still benefit from slavery, from the legacy of discrimination, and other people still obviously are harmed by it. And none of this is gone. It's just sort of quieted down. It's not said explicitly so often. And that's sort of, you know, very nice if your point is that you don't want to feel bad about these things, but it isn't very nice if your point is that you want to fix them or repair their effect.
We're going to take a quick break right now. We've been talking with Ezra Klein, associate editor and staff writer at the American Prospect. His work has appeared in the LA Times, The Guardian, Slate, and more. What do you think about the issue? Do you think that liberals should embrace the guilt or at least a sense of responsibility? Is it a morally conscionable way to go? You can call us with your comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. There's a lot to come today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Join us at 12:30 for Chapter a Day. At 12:30, Jim Fleming reads from Musicophilia, Tales of Music and the Brain by neurologist Oliver Sacks. We're back this hour considering liberal guilt and whether it's helpful, at least in terms of responsibility, in terms of the coming election and in terms of politics in general. You can join us with your comments at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And we've been joined this hour by Ezra Klein, associate editor and staff writer at the American Prospect. And we're going to go to the phones now and pick up a call from Bill in Waukesha. Hi, Bill, you're on the air.
Well, good morning. Thanks for your interesting topic. I'm interested in labeling, and I wonder about conservative guilt. And here's what I'm wondering. We talk about this idea that we would vote for Barack because he's black or Hillary because she's a woman, and we kind of are duped into calling that liberal guilt. But if we vote for John McCain because he was a POW for so long, that would be something else, I'm sure. It'd be conservative reward or something. We wouldn't think of that as conservative guilt across the aisle. I'd be curious about some reflections about that.
Thank you for your call, Joel. And what do you think, Ezra Klein? Seems like
I'd agree completely. I mean, and I'm going to analyze it out even a little bit more. You know, one of the things is sort of conversation about why you do or don't. When you do or don't vote for a candidate in race, it's generally not called liberal guilt. On the Democratic side, it's got a different sort of pejorative term, which is identity politics. You're playing identity politics. You're playing the race card. And, you know, my magazine, actually, The American Prospect, has, I think, a wonderful cover story out this month and asks the question that, you know, the Republican Party is sort of down in all available metrics, down in polls, down in fundraising. Polls show there's not one issue on which you're more trusted than Democrats anymore. And so we ask the question, can identity politics save the right? Because if you look at the campaign John McCain is running, if you look at his slogan, the American president America has been waiting for, the whole stuff about flag lapel pins, I mean, what you're essentially seeing is a candidacy based on white maleness. And I'm not saying in a racist way, but it's sort of appealing to a, hey, he's one of us. And I think that's been true for a long time. And I think, you know, you see this in every election. I thought when John Kerry took his Harley Davidson onto the set of Jay Leno,
that was identity politics. He was sort of showing, you know, the whole Vietnam war hero thing, again, identity politics. It's all there. It's a very common thing in elections. It's just that when it's done to appeal to the majority, it's not identity politics. It's simply a sort of politics we've normalized because we're used to it, because people always try to appeal to the majority. When it's done for a minority, suddenly it gets called out as a sort of dirty, worrying, you know, divisive practice called identity politics.
Well, thanks so much for your call, Bill. And let's take one now from Joel in Fenimore. Hey, Joel, you're on the air.
Hi. Honestly, I think the whole subject is kind of ridiculous, because whatever happened to, you know, I've heard you talk about it, but whatever happened to the issues here? I mean, maybe I'm old-fashioned, which is kind of silly. I'm 26, but honestly, it just seems kind of, I mean, who cares? Shouldn't we just vote for who we think is the best candidate, not whether or not they're black, white, male, female, young, old, POW or not? I don't know. I just think it's kind of a ridiculous discussion to begin with.
All right. Thanks for your call, Joel. Ezra Klein, do you think that it's even possible to be doing that at this point?
I wish it were a ridiculous conversation. I mean, my specialty as a writer is not identity politics. It's healthcare policy and inequality. And I would love to be running an election voting where we vote on that. But so far as I know, we haven't had one ever, unfortunately. And I just, so much as I wish it were different, I don't think we will this time either. At the end of the day, people vote powerfully based on identity. Not everyone, but a lot of people. And, you know, these have, you know, real sort of sizable impact on the electorate. So more we can sort of be honest about that and try to think through what the policy implications are, I think, you know, we can at least make a bit of a silk purse from a sow's ear.
Well, it's interesting, too, because you take the term liberal guilt, for instance, and it's not explicitly talking about race, but you just extrapolate not very far and you get to race. And so it seems like you either have to talk about it or you have to concede it.
Well, I mean, I think liberal guilt term is about race. I think that, or maybe I'm misunderstanding your question.
Well, I'm saying by even using the term liberal guilt and using that as a talking point or a criticism, at least among conservatives, obviously that's been a critique of liberals, and so liberals have to acknowledge that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, there's a ton of that. You know, the whole, there is, after Obama's race speech, this whole effort to, like, attack him based on how he said something about his grandmother, about how she reacted to something one day, and so, you know, he hated his grandmother because she was too white. But, you know, this is going to be brought up. I'd actually say the Muslim stuff you see being sort of sent around, I mean, where these emails sort of falsely claiming Obama's a Muslim have floated all around the country, and now 10% of voters believe it. I don't even really think it's about him being a Muslim. I think that on some level it's about him being just sort of other. And, you know, this stuff will have a real powerful impact. I mean, the race will be part of it. The sort of, oh, he lived in Indonesia for 3 years will be part of it. You know, Obama's going to be a bit of a strange candidate. We've not run a I mean, I would argue he's actually a very mainstream individual, but we've not run a candidate with such a sort of eclectic and unexpected biography, certainly as long as I can remember. I mean, this is a guy who's lived in, you know, a lot of foreign countries, who's a black American, first African-American to be head of the Harvard Law Review. His father's from Kenya. So there's going to be a lot here for people to mine, and, you know, some people mine it for inspiration, and some people mine it for fear. But one way or the other, you know, the history, which, you know, he's made a big part of his campaign, too, don't forget, is going to be a big part of the broader campaign. So, you know, I think we're just going to be talking about it one way or the other.
Okay, let's take one more call. Here is Rob in New Berlin. Hello, Rob, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Morning.
I'm agreeing somewhat with the last caller about, you know, it'd be great if we could just vote for the most qualified candidate, and that's certainly where we should be, and it would be great to get beyond the point of talking about race or gender, et cetera, et cetera. But I think, you know, if we are honest with ourselves, I can look at it and say, all things being equal, if I've got two candidates and I can look at every measure that I can find that they're...
Oh, I'm sorry, caller, we lost you there. I apologize for that. Call back and we'll put you on again. And Ezra Klein, I wanted to thank you so much for being with us this hour as well. We are going to let you go now, but we appreciate your time and your thoughts.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
We've been talking with Ezra Klein, associate editor and staff writer at the American Prospect. His work has appeared in the LA Times, The Guardian, and Slate. We're talking about the term liberal guilt and how it's been used in this election, and also beyond that in terms of how we frame public policy and politics. Your calls are welcome this hour. We'd love to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. And we welcome our next guest now. We'll be talking with Ross Douthat. He's a senior editor at The Atlantic and the author of Privilege, Harvard and the Education of the Ruling Class. Ross Douthat, thank you so much for being with us today.
Sure, it's a pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, obviously, you probably heard some of the conversation there as you were waiting in line to go on. What do you think about the Ron Rosenbaum article on liberal guilt?
I thought it was sort of a strange article, actually, and I think that it misunderstood, at least to a certain extent, what conservatives at least mean when they critique liberal guilt. I think Rosenbaum essentially redefined the term guilt to encompass any feeling of awareness slash shame about America's overall tangled racial history, and then said, well, of course we should feel liberal guilt because anything else is the denial of historical memory and the denial of moral absolutes and so on, all of which are things that conservatives claim to believe in, and so on and so forth. And I think that the actual conservative critique of liberal guilt is a much narrower, a much more narrowly focused argument, and essentially it just says something like this, that the problem with making guilt, with making your guilt over past treatment of racial minorities, women, whoever, the touchstone of your politics, is that it tends to blind you to take it for instance. I think there's been a lot of conservative criticism of the way that many people on the left tended, particularly in the 60s and 70s, to turn a blind eye to the excesses of post-colonial regimes in Africa and the rest of the Third World. That, for instance, you had a lot of people sort of acting as apologists for leaders who essentially became dictators in a lot of these countries on the grounds that, well, you know, it wasn't the white man's place to judge, and you know, obviously the West's guilt for years of colonialism far outstripped anything that was going wrong in these countries, and so on and so forth. Or again, to take an example closer to home, there was a famous report that Daniel Patrick Moynihan authored in the mid 1960s about the decline of the black family and its consequences for African American life. And Moynihan was attacked viciously from the left and accused of blaming the victim. And how could you talk about any of these things? Clearly, this is just the legacy of slavery. And again, it's just something where white people have to make reparations and so forth. So I think that the critique of the way that guilt sort of blinds you to certain political realities is the essence of the conservative critique.
Well, I guess it sort of hinges on the word guilt. Our last guest would have said that it should really be re-termed responsibility and looked at in the sense of sort of righting social disparities right now. How would you respond to that?
Well, I mean, I think that that's true in the broadest sense, as I said, I don't think that that's what conservatives have in mind when they use the term liberal guilt. But I also think that there can be an attempt to steal a couple bases there. If you say, it's one thing to say, well, yes, we are responsible for, what happened in this country 50 years ago, what happened in this country 20 years ago, what's happening in this country now. Clearly, I don't think anyone would deny that responsibility stretches well back into the past and continues to exist today. The question then becomes, accepting this responsibility, do you then need to accept certain often liberal policy prescriptions? I mean, in the case of affirmative action, does the fact that the United States has a responsibility to deal with the legacy of slavery and Jim Crow mean that affirmative action in and of itself is the proper way to go about that? I mean, I think that that can be a separate debate that gets conflated. I also think that there's a distinction that's worth making between the term guilt and the term shame, and that's why I think the term guilt is actually kind of a poor word to use in this context, because I think the appropriate guilt implies an emotion, I think, that you feel over things that you yourself have done, and I think a more appropriate response to the actions of your ancestors or your community or your government in the past is a more generalized shame rather than a personal guilt.
So the guilt is not shame. Shame would be the better thing to feel then.
I would say so. And I mean, I think that there's also, you know,
But that term has been introduced by conservatives, right? That's the way that conservatives have couched that. They didn't choose shame, they chose guilt.
Well, yes, but I think there the critique is that liberals are feeling guilt when they ought to be feeling shame,
mm-hmm.
possibly. These are obviously inexact.
We're getting into neurotic territory here.
Yeah.
Tell me, though, do you think that liberal guilt really exists, or is this a sort of empty rhetoric? Are liberals really going to vote based on any sense of guilt or shame? Maybe social responsibility is a different matter, but if as you're couching it, liberal guilt does exist, or liberal shame, is that something that really is going to sway anybody?
I'm skeptical that traditional liberal guilt is going to be a big factor in this election. I mean, I think liberal guilt has been a powerful force in American life over the past 30 or 40 years, and I think you see this in particular with white liberals from the South who you know felt very personally invested. You know, it was their communities, it was their family, it was their neighbors who were participating in Jim Crow. I think that has faded somewhat, and what you have now is less. It's less a guilt-based feeling than a feeling that it's almost the reverse, and I'm not sure what exactly the term is, but I think that there are a lot of white liberals, and frankly, I mean, I don't think it's confined to liberals. I think you see this among conservatives, too, for whom it would feel good to vote for an African-American for president. It's not a question of feeling bad. It's a question that it would be a vote essentially for sort of reaffirming the promise of America. And I think that's actually quite a positive thing to feel. It's not necessarily the best reason to pick a president, but it's certainly not the most minor consideration.
But, I mean, given the plethora of really keenly felt issues by voters now, the economy, the war in Iraq, is anybody really going to vote based on liberal guilt instead of the issues?
Well, it's hard. I mean, I think people vote on all sorts of reasons. I think that up to a point, it's, you know, if you are a liberal, you're not going to vote for John McCain in this election. But I think that things like this do play into sort of the overarching coverage of the race. For instance, you know, how does the media, for instance, cover the Obama campaign? Does it cover it exactly the way it would cover a campaign by a white politician, or does it cover it, you know, I mean, and you've already seen this, there's been a lot of coverage of the sort of historic nature of the Obama campaign and the opportunity that this affords America to sort of, you know, have, I mean, one of my colleagues at The Atlantic, Andrew Sullivan, has written a great deal about the tremendous opportunity that's afforded to sort of rebrand America by, you know, having someone who's half African American who is named Barack Hussein Obama, having that person as the face of America in the world after 8 years of George W. Bush, that is, you know, that's a tremendous opportunity. I think that is playing a role. I mean, is any individual voter going to go to the polls and say, oh, I'm voting for Barack Obama because, you know, I want to rebrand America? Maybe not. But I think it plays into the way the race is framed, which in turn shapes voters' perceptions of the candidates.
We're going to take a quick break now, and then we'll be back with your phone calls and more with our guest, Ross Douthat. He is a senior editor at The Atlantic and the author of Privilege and Grand New Party with Raihan Salam, which is forthcoming in 2008 from Doubleday. Well, what do you think? Should liberals be ashamed of liberal guilt, or should the current generation try to atone for the sins of its ancestors? Is it too much to ask? The number to call is 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. I'm Veronica Rickert, and this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. After 1 o'clock today, stay tuned for Talk of the Nation Science Friday, science and art mix this week at the World Science Festival in New York. Plus, a new climate report predicts big changes close to home from global warming. That's Talk of the Nation Science Friday coming up at 1 o'clock today on Wisconsin Public Radio. Veronica Rickert back with you today, and I'm joined by Ross Douthat, a senior editor at The Atlantic and the author of the book Privilege, Harvard and the Education of the Ruling Class. And Ross Douthat, we have some callers waiting to talk to you. Let's pick up Tim from Sparta. Hi, Tim, you're on the air.
Excuse me. Yeah, thanks for taking my call. first off, I'd just like to say that I am your typical white person that clings to guns and religion and to Barack Obama. And my frustration level with this whole topic is just the media and how it covers the whole thing and how they portray, how they basically just give Obama a total free pass on this. If John McCain came out and made a comment and said a typical black person, and that would be bad enough. He'd get crucified for it. But if he said something factually true, like a typical black person that doesn't pay child support, or a typical black man that doesn't pay child support, which
is a big problem. True?
It's a major problem in the African American community. The breakdown of the family, and with African American men that are not stepping up to the plate, and the amount of single black women that are taking care of their kids all by themselves. Now, obviously, that's not how it is, broad stroke. But overall, like, you take Milwaukee, huge problem in Milwaukee with this issue. But it's like it's taboo for a white person to even talk about this issue. And if you do, you get crucified for it. But yet, you know, Obama, he can come out and he can say, typical white person who clings to guns and religion. And it's just the whole thing is extremely frustrating for me. As a white male, it's 35. Another thing, you bring up affirmative action. I'm in my, middle of my career right now. And I have a fairly good job that I really like, but I see it. I see if I was an African American male, I would be able to advance so much easier into upper level management. You have an ace in your pocket, and you know what? There's a lot of white Americans that feel that way, and it's frustrating to me how. On two prongs, how it's I'm not allowed to talk about this in the public forum. People all automatically say I'm racist, and I'm not. I truly believe that to vote for somebody just because they're black is just as wrong as not voting for somebody because they're black. Race shouldn't have a color, or shouldn't have a factor whatsoever. But when the candidates bring it up and they talk about it, and when he says typical white person and makes that comment, mm-hmm. It's offensive to me that McCain could not make an equal comment like that without getting totally crucified by the liberal media.
I thought that Barack Obama had been criticized for that remark. What is your take on that, Rostoffit?
Well, yeah, there's a lot to chew on there. I mean, I think that, Barack Obama did take an enormous amount of heat for his comments about clinging to guns and religion. Now, clearly there is also a double standard at work where, for one thing, black politicians can say things about the African American community that white politicians can't say, and making generalizations about white Americans is more socially acceptable among politicians, I think, than making generalizations about black Americans. Now, these double standards exist for a reason, which is the fact that African Americans are a traditionally oppressed minority in American society, and white Americans are not. And I don't think some sort of double standard is necessarily a bad thing. I mean, but I do think this is something that's going to be a feature of American politics going forward, particularly as white Americans, become a greater and go from being a majority, a super majority of the American population, to being a majority, to being a minority. And as the era of Jim Crow recedes further into the background, I think you'll have more and more arguments about, does this double standard exist? Should it exist? Have we moved far enough beyond the legacy of Jim Crow where, we should be able to have more honest debates and so on?
Well, thank you for that call, Jim. And let's take a call now from Harry in Madison. Yeah, hey, Harry, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. I think liberal guilt doesn't represent anything real. It's just a political phrase, an epithet. I'm conservative. I'm a black person. And I think all Christian ethical people should feel guilt when they do something wrong. And guilt should not be the conservatives who feel guilt, and they should. And the liberals who feel guilty, and they should, when they do something wrong, like putting the Japanese in prison camps,
mm-hmm.
Like bombing a village and killing a lot of civilians, like the Japanese attack on Nanking. All those things are things for which a nation should feel guilty and make reparations if they can. But we should feel guilty about the way we treat women, too. There's a long history of sexism in our society. And the guy who called earlier and talked about he's been a young white man, he can't get ahead as fast as black people. Now look at the disparity of assets and wages between blacks and whites. We'll never get there. We must just come out and accept the fact that this is a racist nation. Nobody chose it to be that way. But that's how it evolved historically. And we are trying our best to even out things, and we have come far. But we shouldn't deny the fact that there is disparity and there is discrimination. I feel it. Women feel it. People know it's there. Japanese feel it. Mexican-Americans feel it. And it's not just this country. It's in lots of other countries where majority groups take advantage of minority groups. Liberal guilt doesn't, it's just a Republican buzzword. It's a curse word. It's an epithet. It's a pejorative. It doesn't mean anything. Conservatives feel guilty, and they should. All ethical people should feel guilty when they do something wrong.
And that is the argument, I suppose, if that guilt is used especially to lead to public policy.
Yeah, but it just say liberal guilt doesn't mean anything. In India, where they've had discrimination against the Dalits for thousands of years, the Indian government has done something about it. There are quotas for Dalits in different parts of the government and in education institutions because they know it's wrong. And we all know it's wrong. And liberal guilt, like I say, it's just a political term. All ethical, decent people, I don't mean that the people who say it's not decent, but I mean all ethical people who know right from wrong know that what we did to Japanese was wrong. What we did to blacks was wrong. What we have done to women is wrong. And we should feel guilty. Guilty is a Christian term. I'm a Christian. And when we feel guilty, when we sin, we feel guilty and we go to God and we ask for forgiveness and we try to do better. And that's that.
Well, thank you for that call, Harry. And Ross Douthat, do you think that we're trivializing that sense of guilt, that sense of, as Harry would say, it seems like a virtue, that guilt, especially when it leads us to do an ethical thing? Are we trivializing it by calling it guilt or liberal guilt?
Well, I mean, I think that guilt, personal guilt, should not be trivialized. And it's obviously, you know, I'm a Christian, too. It's an incredibly important ethical concept, and you know, without guilt, you can't have a system of morality. I mean, I think one question though is whether some of what conservatives call liberal guilt is essentially one liberal feeling guilty on behalf of other people, and then asking a third group of people to accept the consequences of their guilt. So I think so. For instance, if you take something like affirmative action, right, and you have the first caller calling in and saying he's a white man in his 30s who feels like he experiences affirmative action on an everyday basis, I think a lot of conservatives would say, look, you know, you have elite liberals who insist that we need to have affirmative action programs, elite liberals who don't experience the consequences of affirmative action programs because they are elites, because they are in a position where they're going to succeed in American society no matter what. And so they're essentially asking working class whites to bear the burden of their own of their guilt. Or again, you know, you take an issue like immigration, where, you know, you could argue that liberal guilt over the historic treatment of minorities by the First World, by the West, leads liberals to support an open immigration policy. But again, who is experiencing the consequences of a liberal immigration policy? It isn't the liberals. I mean, this is you know, and obviously this is a very debatable topic, but I think again, the conservative critique isn't that guilt, isn't that people shouldn't feel guilt, or you know, that we shouldn't be aware of the past. It's a question of how that guilt manifests itself in public policy.
Let's take another phone call. Here we have Brad in Saner. Welcome, Brad. You're on the air.
Well, this is not Brad. This is Bud in Saner.
Okay, sorry about that. I have Brad, but good to talk to you, Bud.
Let's talk about the issue that's the premise of the program. How about getting back to capability, ethical behavior, and credentials as the first three criteria for electing a president of the United States, then get to the issues. Even classifying liberal guilt as a minor credential is absolutely ridiculous. I mean, there is no place in electing a president based on guilt feelings. People are responsible for what they do and what they say and should be held accountable for that, not their parent, not their grandparents, not their great-grandparents. Why don't we forget about rebranding the USA? It doesn't need a rebrand. We're a great country. We get greater all the time. We're fixing wrongs of the past every day. Why don't you people get a life?
All right, thank you, Brandt. Bud, my mistake. Anyway, Ross Douthat.
Yeah, that's strong words. You know, I think that, you know, having criticized liberal guilt, I think I should stick up for the notion that, you know, that, I mean, I think Bud is right. You know, yes, America is righting the wrongs of the past every day, and America is a great country, and it is getting greater in many ways. I do think that a lot of people see the election of Barack Obama, though, as a useful symbol of precisely that kind of improvement. And I think that this is true among many conservatives as well as liberals. You know, if you talk to conservatives, even people who say, well, I'm not going to vote for Barack Obama, at the end of the day, they'll also say, well, you know, the morning that he's elected president, even though I feel bad about a Democrat having won, in a certain way, I'll feel good about America, because it will be a sign that, you know, in a really important sense, we've transcended part of our racially discriminatory past. And I think, you know, this comes up in the debate over Barack Obama and Jeremiah Wright. I think a lot of people have said rightly that, in a sense, for Barack Obama to be elected president would give the lie to part of Jeremiah Wright's worldview. And in that sense, it would be an important victory for a more colorblind America. Now, again, obviously there are lots of other issues that people should be voting on, and, you know, I don't think voting for Barack Obama based on his skin color is a good idea, but it's an extra feature of his candidacy, I think, and an important one.
I wonder if the Obama campaign would choose to be talking this much about race, or whether it's been an issue that's been sort of thrust upon them.
That's a really good question, and I don't know what the answer is, because it seems like it cuts so much both ways. I mean, I think, you know, Geraldine Ferraro got a lot of heat for saying, oh, Barack Obama only got this far because he's black. But in an important sense, that, you know, it's true that Obama's race and his background are a really important part of his narrative and a really important part of his political success. On the other hand, it's also clear, I mean, it's clear that, you know, they wouldn't want to be talking about it in the context of Jeremiah Wright, for instance. And it may be just that it is all about context. There are contexts in which Obama's race really helps him, and talking about race really helps him, and there are contexts in which it doesn't.
Well, if you take the term liberal guilt, that doesn't expressly refer to race, but yet it does just one step away, and even a term like that you have to address from the vantage of race.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think that to the extent that, for instance, positive media coverage of Obama gets framed as liberal guilt in action, I think that hurts Obama. I'm not sure. I mean, I'm not sure how important a part this is of the conservative narrative. I mean, I think the symbolic conservative attacks on Obama have actually, I think, tended to revolve more around issues of patriotism in a way than issues of race. And I think that this is the reason the Jeremiah Wright thing was so politically potent, was that it was the intersection of race with, you know, this idea of anti-Americanism, goddamn America, and so on and so forth. I mean, I think, you know, yeah, you do get a lot of conservatives saying, oh, when Newsweek puts Obama on its cover, it's just, you know, white reporters falling in love with a black candidate. But I'll be interested to see how it plays out. I don't know.
Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
And, sure, it was a pleasure. Thanks for having me on.
Great, thanks so much. We've been talking with Ross Douthat. He's a senior editor at The Atlantic and the author of the book Privilege, Harvard and the Education of the Ruling Class. His new book, coming out in 2008 from Doubleday, is called the Grand New Party, and that one is with Raihan Salam. We want to thank both our guests this morning. We talked earlier with Ezra Klein, who was associate editor and staff writer at the American Prospect, and his work has appeared in the LA Times, The Guardian, Slate, and more. And he's a frequent guest on MSNBC's Hardball with Chris Matthews. We thank you as well for all your calls this morning and your thoughts. Sorry we couldn't get to every call, but we do appreciate the fact that you called. Coming up, I hope you'll stay with us for Larry Mueller. That's coming up at 11 o'clock. Whether your garden grows cockle shells or pretty maids all in a row, get some great advice coming up on Garden Talk after 11. Larry Mueller talks with Dick Zondag, president of the Young Seed Company of Randolph, Wisconsin. I want to thank Carmen Jackson for producing this hour for on-air production and Rhonda Fanning for production as well. I'm Veronica Rickert, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.